Good evening, Bodhisattvas.
Good evening.
Please sit comfortably if you're not already. And if you are, keep it up. So, now for the territory beyond the blip of the bright road. So once again, the bright road that the ancestors knew is right in front of us, right in front of you, in everything you see and hear. So just a brief recap of the morning. The blip showed up with the flavor of how to say, you don't know that road, and you can't see it, and to distance myself from it, yeah. And it came off more as, more of that. It couldn't get its feet beneath it, it couldn't get the ground to stand on, and so it was a blip, and things moved on. So I had it with me, traveling up to the office, sitting at the computer, just this, sometimes just the word, bright road, or where is this bright road, or what is this bright road, yeah? Just had it there with me, curious, and dropping the question or the bright road, that little phrase, in from time to time. And kind of having almost a side eye out. Look, am I going to catch a glimpse of it over here, over there? Yeah. And just looking and waiting and seeing, well, where is it? So not necessarily saying, well, it's in everything that I see and affirming that, but just being curious, where is it actually? And I remember I'd left the office and drove down the big hill. I was up at the academy. And then heading towards one of the little checkpoints where there's somebody checks your ID and they have a little scanner thing. They scan it and they get their screen that says, yes, you're okay, or something like that. Well, hopefully you get that. As I'm driving up toward it, the guard is out there holding his device, and the sun catches the screen and this flash happens. I was like, ah, where is this bright road? That little flash there. I said, well, okay, thanks. See that. Go by and get my ID scanned, everything's good, and I keep traveling on and enjoy the moment. And then there's that, maybe another mind habit saying, okay, yeah, just a coincidence, don't make much of it. Big deal, yeah. And that's fine, it wasn't saying no, but just not saying yes. Just saying, oh, well, keep going. So I'm still having the question, where is the bright road? What is the bright road? And go around a curve and another curve and over on a hill, there's a bunch of houses, which are in this area, towards this area, out there on the front. And all of a sudden, one house catches the light of the sun, its window, and boom, there it is. The other houses didn't, just one. It's like, boom, here it is, again. Bright road that the ancestors knew, right in front of me, reflecting off of things. And again, the flavor wasn't affirming and saying, yes, this is it. But it was just saying, look. And inviting me to keep doing that. And I noticed, you know, that was when things were, I was like, okay, let's slow down. I don't want to go, you know, too deeply and too quickly into this. Let's just let it relax and open up. And so the question and the inquiry wasn't as constant and persistent, but there was just still this curiosity, maybe a wordless curiosity, traveling around, meeting things. And that's continued to happen and still is happening now, carrying this question inherent in the inquiry. But wordlessly, just looking, listening. Then new things started to show up to meet me, to toss in their two cents, to bring some more things to be curious about. And they come, most of them, from our sutra books, and some you encountered today, and others you may encounter as we roll on. But it's, what about those dark roads? Yeah? What about the dark roads that are spoken of? They're not called bright roads, but if it's in everything that I see and hear, if I'm meeting a dark road, is that also the bright road? Or is that something else? And that's all. There's no answer. It's just, what is that? What is the dark road? Is it also, like I said, or is it something different? So I considered, the first one we come through in the sutra service, the dedication, that says, Guan Yin finds us in the dark and broken roads. And the question was, well, why? Why does she come and find us? If I'm going to say the bright roads in everything I meet, and I meet a dark road, is that something that needs to be fixed, or do I need to be taken away from? Do I need to be met there? So why does Guan Yin come? Compassion. Why does that bodhisattva of compassion come when I'm on a dark and broken road? If you notice, the words don't say, and Guan Yin finds us and rescues us and takes us somewhere else to get us away from the dark and broken road. She finds us there. So I thought, well, that's interesting. Maybe she couldn't find us anywhere else. Maybe it was hard to see us in the bright roads and in the simple places. But because we're in a dark and broken road, she's like, I see you. My job is to listen to the cries of the world. And because you're in the dark and broken road, I can hear you, and now I see you. Maybe we're doing her a favor by meeting the dark and broken road. And she finds us, again, not to rescue us or take us away, to join us. Say, oh, wow, what's this? What's this dark and broken road you're on? So maybe we are offering to her an experience that she enjoys as well. Maybe we're the bodhisattva. The bodhisattva of the dark and broken road. Calling Guan Yin to us. I don't know. Play with that. It's fun to just switch things around, not assume that we know Guan Yin's intentions or that all the dark and broken roads are places that should be avoided. And then we meet Hakuin a short time later in the sutra service, who says, we cycle through heavens and hells because we keep setting out on the dark roads of ignorance. Dark road after dark road, when will we be free of birth and death? Or free from birth and death. Like, oh, is Hakuin complaining about those? Is that a problem? If I'm meeting that, I'm cycling through the heavens and hells because of my ignorance onto the dark roads, Is that the bright road also that the ancestors knew? It's certainly in what I see and hear. It's what I encounter. So I found myself playing with the intonation of the last phrase there. And this has happened elsewhere. It's come up just because I like I said earlier, I like to play with, you know, just play and mess around with these sutras and don't take it at face value. So now it makes sense, this new, or this other iteration of that last line. Instead of saying, when will we be free from birth and death? It's more like saying, so tell me, exactly when will we be free of birth and death? Is that some place you can get to be free of this life, to be free of it? When exactly? And is it necessary to get free of it? Yeah? That invites me, well, thankfully I'm not free of birth and death and the dark roads because they offer me something. The nitty and the gritty and the heavy and the dark. I don't know that I want to be free of them. Or free from them. What's it like to be free within them? Free within birth and death. And again, might that be the bright road as well? The dark roads of ignorance. The cycle of birth and death, round and round and round. So another sutra dropping, instead of a name dropping. Well, I could drop a name. It's a Shito, Shichien. Talks about the dark and the bright. Just one phrase came to mind. Brightness and darkness are a pair, like front foot and back foot walking. Bright, dark, bright, dark. They're part of the same body. One body of bright and dark. Because of bright, dark. Because of dark, bright. Not two. I like to see it as the bright is just a particular shade of the dark. And the dark is a particular shade of the bright. Maybe it's all just light, not assigned any kind of value, but just light that is bright, just by its nature, and light that is dark by its nature. Because of the bright, the dark. Because of the dark, the bright. They're connected. So, bright road, dark road. Is there a difference? Fundamentally, walking them, there's a difference. But essentially, at the bottom, is there a difference? We cycle through heavens and hells because we keep setting out on the bright roads of wisdom. Bright road after bright road. When will we be free of birth and death? Yeah, you can change that up too. Yeah, sometimes the bright can be quite exasperating. Yeah? Sometimes. So there's still the matter of, well, what is this bright road? And how can I really get to the the bottom of that? Can I figure that out? It feels like a shift here. Instead of being on the outside, wondering what the ancestors saw, we're on the same side, looking together. Maybe I'm inviting a whisper into my ear from an ancestor to say, well, this is what it is. Maybe they're waiting for me to tell them. This is journeying together. What is this bright road? Where is this bright road? And what I find happening as I'm looking into it, and these different phrases and other ancestors are offering their two cents, is that what bright is, what bright means, begins to change. It begins to get freed from my ideas of it. And the same with the dark. They're front foot and back foot walking, but when you're trotting along, you're not, if you say front foot, back foot, you kind of walk stuttery, stepped, yeah? You're just walking and they're flowing, and I don't know which is which, but I don't have to know which is which. I can just follow their walking and get where I need to get. So maybe that's part of it. What if I free brightness from my ideas of it and free darkness of my ideas of it and allow it to show itself to me? So there was a favorite quote of mine that floated in this afternoon. And it's about that same thing of, as I see it, it's about questioning our ideas about the bright and the dark, or in this case, this is the bright and the dark. You'll hear it referred to just with different terms. This is from Dawei. Do you want to know what the truth is? It's true thusness, Buddha nature, enlightenment, nirvana. Do you want to know what the disease is? It's arbitrary conception, inverted thoughts and perceptions, greed, hatred, erroneous views. Even so, apart from the inversions of arbitrary conceptions, there is no truly so Buddha nature. Apart from greed, hatred, and erroneous views, there is no enlightenment or nirvana. A mind habit comes up and wants to play with this and make it make sense. And what it wants to say is, it wants to insert the word without. Like, without those dark things, the negative things, you wouldn't have the positive things. And its implication is that those, you have to be in those to be able to find the path towards the other ones. So maybe the seeds of enlightenment, the seeds of nirvana are in our delusions and in our hatred and greed. But we can transform them, and then they become the light stuff, right? That's what the mind habit wants to say, that, well, this is talking about a path, right? But it doesn't say anything that implies a dependence upon one another. It says, apart from. So if you were to cut out delusion and cut out the erroneous views, you wouldn't have nirvana, enlightenment. And likewise, if you were not to, if you cut out nirvana, enlightenment, there's an interesting idea, you wouldn't have delusion. So striving for that bright, reaching for enlightenment, trying to wake up, trying to get there, creates a here that's not there, and it's a problem sometimes. We want to get away from it. But if we don't create that bright over there, what's here? No delusion. Or no delusion that's a problem, right? So I really like the word, you know, it says apart from. They need one another. They are the front foot and back foot walking. Nirvana, delusion. Nirvana, delusion. So in and of themselves, the delusions, the darkness, the greed, hatred, ignorance, are just some of the things that we meet, that we see, and that we hear inwardly, outwardly, that we manifest, yeah? They're just what happens. But then we tell a story that there's something wrong with them, because when they occur and they're in my life, things aren't, they don't feel smooth. They're harder. They're difficult to deal with. Now I've got to fix this. I've got to get away from that. I've got to stop that. Yeah? And it's not a bad thing to want to address those issues and try to lessen those. But to have a story that I will reduce them and get rid of them, and then I'll have the brightness. It'll be here. Well, that's a story that we create. And Dawei's phrasing and his invitation is to see it's already here. It's kind of a riff on it. It's in everything that you see and hear. Your awakening. It has the light, it has the dark. They are not two. So if I don't elevate the light and I don't lower and cast out the dark of myself, if I don't try to push away what I'm always encountering that I don't enjoy, and if I don't try to extend my reach too far beyond those things to something that's way out there, if I can be with what is here, well, how is that when I welcome what comes to meet me? Brightness and darkness are a pair. Delusion and nirvana are a pair. One body. Different manifestations of being. Not a problem. All right. One last sutta drop. And it relates to this one, and it's one that we may encounter at some point this week, from Song of Realizing the Way. It says, don't search for truth, and don't cut off delusion. Truth and delusion have no shape. So don't go searching for the truth, because if you're going to search for the truth, you have an idea of what it looks like, and you've created this concept, and you've given it a shape. And if you're going to cut off delusion, you have an idea of what it looks like, you've given it a shape. And you're looking for, how can I search for that truth and cut off that delusion? Well, don't. By not searching for or trying to cut off, it's to unshape them, to take our ideas of what they are away, and allow them to show us themselves. And we don't have to say truth, delusion. We just notice this, and now this. We notice what it's like to meet it. We notice in that moment how it is to be that. So don't search for the truth. Again, don't reach beyond where you're at. And don't cut off delusion. Don't cut away where you're at, if it happens to be delusion. Red Pine, when he visited, talked about the Heart Sutra. His riff is Nirvana, the ultimate delusion. And he's talking about this. We create this idea of Nirvana and what it would look like, and that's a delusion. But I like that. Nirvana, the ultimate delusion. I like it. Go for it. Go for Nirvana so you can deal with that ultimate delusion.
Sounds like the ultimate driving machine.
The ultimate vehicle.
Yeah.
And then for me, this point loops back around to our companion phrase for the retreat. When it says, the bright road that the ancestors knew is in everything that you see and hear. We put all this together, saying to me, bright road, take away your definition of what that means. Just let it be a word. Don't define it, don't confine it, don't have a concept of what the bright road is. And it's leaning more towards everything I see and hear. For me, the invitation is not to wonder, what is the bright road? The invitation is to look. Listen. What's meeting you? And not to say, ah, there it is, or oh, there it isn't. But just to look, listen, what is meeting me now? What's it like to welcome it? To look into it, to be with it. And not try to categorize it, not try to pin it down, not try to create a place that I need to abide in. But instead, offer it a place through me in which it can abide for the time that it needs to. Passing through, yeah? And everything I see and hear, playing host to that. Looking. Listening. And knowing whatever I know. I had a thought somewhere along this, in this journey of mine that I was interested in, and then I thought, I'm not going to talk about that, but now here it comes. So here I am looking and listening and going, oh, here's something that wants to be offered. It has to do with the ancestors, right? And the thought was, instead of looking at these ancestors like the ones I've been bringing in, what if the ancestors are the thoughts of the previous moment? Yeah? If I'm traveling along and meeting things and welcoming them, every thought is instantly turned into an ancestor. Just right here. Just right here. So, it's instant ancestry. And that changes, you know, the bright road that the ancestors knew just a moment ago. Everything that I see and hear. Boom, boom. So they're not these people from long ago. They're the moment that just passed. And yeah, and there, and there. And that just brings along the steady stream of meeting and knowing and traveling this road without interruption. So thanks.
So does that last thought have anything to do with today being 420?
I saw that on the sign over there. I thought, oh, 420. Didn't mean anything to me, but yeah, it's a big day. But I don't know. Other than brightness and darkness are gathered together in a joint venture. That's as best as I can do.
Well, now you're in the weeds.
Yeah.
Don't you feel that Siddhartha achieved enlightenment when he was underneath the Bodhi tree?
No.
Okay.
Ask him. There's a dialogue he had with Subhuti in the Diamond Sutra, I believe, where he says, Subhuti, when I attained perfect, unexcelled enlightenment, did I get anything? Subhuti thought and says, no, you didn't. He goes, that's right. Because if I had gotten anything, it wouldn't be perfect, unexcelled enlightenment.
Well, I never knew that he thought, I always thought he said that he did achieve it, but I didn't know.
Can I butt in?
All right.
That one of the koans I think we're handing out later this week says, someone asked, what did all the Buddhas and the enlightened people attain? What did they get? And the response comes, they were like thieves who break into a house that's an empty house, abandoned.
What I think, when you said you thought he said, yes, I did, or something. Well, I think that, about his experience
I haven't studied him enough. I mean, I know the general story, and that's what the general story says, but maybe I'm missing something.
Well, I mean, you have to look at the interpretation and see what he's really saying, because he reaches down and touches the earth and says, I in all things are awakened. And to me, that's not that something was missing and then all of a sudden happened. It was his story, maybe, about what awakening and enlightenment was. You know, he had that long journey, the ascetic journey of trying to find it and get there. Mm-hmm. And he had basically some kind of idea of what it would be like to solve the matter of suffering. And that's why he couldn't find it all those other years. Then he just sat down and looked and listened. And all of his concepts and ideas were undone. They fell apart. And then, it was already there. As I like to say, awakening, enlightenment, doesn't belong to anybody. Nobody has enlightenment. Nobody has their enlightenment. They wake up to the enlightenment that's already fundamentally here, eternally. So when we work with the koans or we read from the ancestors the thing with the koans is it's inviting us to experience the same mind, the same consciousness of the person who woke up in the original story. And the reason that can happen is because it wasn't their awakening. It's just what is. Because the other way I'd respond to your question about under the Bodhi tree, I'd say, well, no, not just under the Bodhi tree. Everywhere he went. And includes all the years before. He could not be there. It's just he was able to see it, experience it, know it differently, just as we are able to. And there's a Zen saying, even the Buddha was only halfway there when he died. So even if he did find enlightenment, it wasn't the end. Even he got to the end of his life and said everything he had said. Halfway there. Life goes on. Awakening, enlightenment are still here. They still go on. And that's what we are to meet. Not try to taste his and ride on his, on the waves behind him. Let's grab it here. Let's wake up here. Yeah. And when we die, we'll be 50% there. Halfway there. And that's enough, I think. Not dead yet. Anything else anyone cares to bring forth? A question, comment, what you're finding in your journey with the Bright Road?
Tuned into the parts of myself that so desperately wanted to wake up, and recently I've been more in attunement with all that which has zero desire to wake up within me, and that's been, it's been interesting to apply this Bright Road image to that inquiry, and just like really meeting that thing that loves the dark road, and then like applying this concept of, or I should say removing the concept behind the Bright Road and behind the dark road, and watching that swirl around. But it's been interesting to like really meet that fierce resistance, and that would much rather sit in its own pile of for the rest of, so I don't know if you, I was talking with Sarah earlier about like the fierce resistance and how to meet that in practice. But
fierce resistance to being itself,
any sort of like loss of control, like really letting the concepts fall away, letting the story fall away to reveal.
Well, first I noticed when you were speaking, you said, you know, your body language, when you talked about going for the awakening stuff, you were like this. And then you said, and now not doing that, your hands moved close to your own body. So not, you didn't go backwards. You kind of moved into this. So I noticed that initially, yeah? I'm not knowing all the flavor of the fierce resistance, but I wonder if it's like a balance. You know, we go for the awakening, we strive for it so much, it's like we're pulling a rubber band. We go the other direction, it's like, and then it might feel freeing after being in that tension of going for something, and it's slack, and we bounce back this way, and maybe it's, I don't want to be in that tension again. Maybe that's the resistance. Maybe it's not really to the awakening. Maybe it's, I don't want to put myself through that. I want to stay here in the pile and just maybe there's some settling happening. I'm not sure. But it's something to be curious about. What is this resistance? Is it really resistance? Or is that a story that is the mind is spinning to keep us from going, you know, okay, it's okay right here. You know, that self that likes to dominate the territory and motivate us and get us places. I find that when we start to catch on to what it does, it fears that it's going to be out of a job. It doesn't realize, we're not trying to get rid of you, we just want to invite you to settle down with the rest of us and, you know, it'll be okay. And it's interesting to see the techniques it comes up with to try to keep it self-employed. So maybe it's like, well, if I can't get you to reach for awakening, let's fiercely resist it. So, okay. How about we hold... Okay, I'll listen, but... Just be curious, yeah? It also reminds me of something that crossed my mind earlier then fell out. But it has to do with this... You know, the bright road is in front of us and everything that we see and hear. Don't believe that. Yeah? Don't hold it up to be the truth and don't assert it. Just stop denying it. That's the invitation. It's a balancing out. Because we are often in the place of saying, this isn't it. This phrase isn't to replace that, it's just to pull us in the other direction. And then we can swing back and maybe find this middle place between assertion and denial. And that's what our lives are at. And that's where the invitation of the looking and the listening abides. So don't say it is, don't say it isn't. What is it? Look, listen. Yeah. The Buddha, in one of his teachings, he taught, the phrase was, I teach non-abiding. And somebody said, oh, say, that's the truth, that's what we should do, non-arising. I teach non-arising. So somebody says, oh, so-and-so taught arising, but you're saying non-arising. So that's what it is, right? He goes, no, I teach non-arising because so-and-so teaches arising. And you think it's arising. So I'm doing it to course correct. So don't believe it's non-arising, just stop believing it is arising. And what do you find in between? So to me that relates somehow. Reaching, resisting, maybe it's the same thing. Balancing itself out.
Like the yin and the yang symbol?
Yeah. Except in a lava lamp. So you don't have this perfect symmetrical yin and yang. You have this morphing, oh, there's more yin than yang. But it's all, you know, if we take that analogy further, you have the same amount, just in different shapes, and sometimes the other one seems to dominate and whatever. But they're always in harmony. They're always balancing. Balance is found through movement, not through stillness. So they have to do that. They have to morph and move. Otherwise they die.
And in a way that may be the problem with trying to talk about Siddhartha's enlightenment also, is that if to say this is what happened, you know, this is the story and this is what happened, in a way, it's like trying to take a snapshot of a river, of something that's really moving and living, and a snap. You know, our little Facebook posts of the Buddha's enlightenment aren't really going to capture it. Mm-hmm. Anything that really happened. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I know his goal was to end suffering, and I felt like he accomplished some of that. I mean, he saw all the suffering in the world and he devised a way to stop it. And I think meditation is, his form of meditation seemed to be the answer, or his answer. That's my perception, but.
You know, what's interesting is all, you know, the teachings, the Eightfold Path, his form of meditation or whatever, it didn't exist until after his experience. So he wasn't even following that. All that came out of the experience, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So even to say, oh, if you follow this path, you'll get there, it's like, well, but you didn't. So that's interesting to look at too.
For me, trying to get some ground under things, when you were talking this morning about, that habit mind that always wants to put a story in things, and this is the way it goes. And, it feels like when you use the word abide, like abiding in. Okay, maybe not even abiding.
Yay!
Yeah, not abiding in anything.
Mm-hmm.
That what's really coming up for me is yesterday I felt so disoriented about the newness of everything and not knowing, how do we set up a retreat and how do we do our thing here? And I was just completely disoriented. Plus, I had been sick, and also with my brothers, things have been very disorienting because I don't know how things are going to go for them. And part of my mind wants to make both my brothers have had mental. Well, one of them has some mental health issues, and the other one has some medical issues. But I've been trying to get ground around. Like a story or something to sort of cement it so I can feel settled or something like that. This is how things are supposed to look. Like here at the retreat, this is how things are supposed to look.
yeah.
And nothing in my life lately, well, not nothing, but a lot of things have not had any of that, this is how they're supposed to look, settling in. I don't know if I'm making any sense here, but.
It hasn't met your expectations.
What's that?
Life hasn't met your expectations. It's not doing what it's supposed to.
Right.
Right.
And it's just, so there's like no abiding in anything. It's just this next moment and this next moment and this next moment. You know, I think I've got it now, and then everything changes. Okay, now I think I've got it now, and everything changes. And just, I can see the, the uncomfortableness of it.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that. But there's also been a little bit of, thank goodness, I don't have to settle for anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't know that whole I don't know what's going to happen next time. And my brother had to go to the ER the very next morning after he had been discharged, and I thought, oh my gosh, immediately my brain went to he had open heart surgery. Immediately it went to, oh, something failed with his heart. And he was in an ambulance to get there. So it's like, oh my gosh, the worst case scenario could be happening here. That's where the story was going.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got there, it was not like that.
Mm-hmm.
He was talking, he was explaining what happened, low blood pressure, dizziness, you know, things I can relate to. But this whole other story I had, that was scary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the story was scarier than real life.
But it provided something to help you get there. Yeah, that's an interesting thing. Because to really be, you know, non-abiding, it means even when the stories come, we can, those can be our ground. They're not the ground, but they can be the ground that is maybe that stepping stone that gets us to see what's happening, and then it just keeps going. I remember, you know, that catastrophic thinking is what I call it. I would do that when I was a kid, when, like my mom was supposed to have been home at 5 o'clock, and now it's 7, and I don't know where she is, and maybe she was in an accident, all this kind of, you know, all this kind of stuff that became the story, kind of like what you're saying is going on for you. And I'm picturing this and waiting. And then she comes home. She's just fine. She's been out with friends, and this is before cell phones, so couldn't call. And I find I'm disappointed. I've spent all this time making up this story, and you're fine.
How dare you?
And then I feel bad, but I notice that. Like, huh, I was preferring the story because it gave me something to make sense out of this.
Yeah. Make sense out of it. Yeah.
And then when reality met me and things were fine, it's like, I already, you know, maybe I'm going to be an orphan. Whatever. Darn it, I don't get to experience the orphan life now. Thanks, Mom. But yeah, it was something that got me through.
Yeah.
And grounded and groundlessness is the phrase that I like to use to categorize life. We're always grounded in the groundlessness of life, and it carries us through.
It might have been a Joan Dharma talk, Abiding Nowhere and Deeply.
Yeah, Diamond Sutra. That's a different way. Yeah, Abiding Nowhere and Deeply.
That is how I find. How I find to be in this thing of brightness and darkness without the discrimination, without separation, without the thoughts, and without moving away from it. And somehow those two phrases, nowhere and deeply, abiding nowhere and deeply, just are perfect.
Phenomenal.
And if I can do that, maybe I can stop my story. See?
Or you can just pat him on the head.
Or
if you didn't have any stories, what would you have?
I would be there. The stories of the stories.
You'd be making up new stories to.
Maybe not. Maybe I would just show up.
Yeah, because to abide a place with no stories isn't nowhere.
Right.
It's a place without story, so therefore it's a place. To abide nowhere means everywhere.
Exactly that place.
Stories and all.
Yeah, all of it. And I like the deeply part of it, you know.
Yeah.
It feels earthy and I'm in this, yeah?
Feels doubtful.
Even lower than that.
Even lower. Even beyond.
Yeah.
Without the stories, you're doing the thing in front of you, and then you're doing the next thing in front of you, and you're not.
And with the stories, that's still happening. It just looks different.
It's more surprising.
With the stories or without?
With them.
Yeah, when you go, oh, you're fine.
You know, we don't have too much trouble kind of honoring our dreams and noticing the incredible creativity in them. And are our stories really all that different?
I used to daydream that I'd be driving down the road next to Aristotle and Galileo and Newton, and we'd be just having these conversations. Of course, I was very wise and knowledgeable. They were amazed at, you know. It was very entertaining. But I haven't done that in like several years.
Did Einstein give you any new theories or anything when the plan broke down quickly? You know, just curious. I mean, if anything broke down.
The physics of the lottery?
Yeah, there we go. The only way to win is not to play. Oh, wait, that's a different story.
Well, maybe you invite your friends back for a ride and see. See what happens, yeah? All right, so I have a story that we need to wrap up and move on to what's next. So thank you very much. And stay curious, keep looking, keep listening.